Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
Terry Thorney of the Irish Times is with us in studio, and Keith Wood is on the line. Gents, you're very welcome. Good evening to you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So it's an opportunity properly to reflect on our greatest November ever.
Yes, it is definitely greatest ever. Yeah, you beat the All Blacks for the first time in 111 years, and you also complete a treble of beating South Africa, New Zealand and Australia, the first team country to do it since England's World Cup winners in 2003. And it wasn't just that, it was the standard and quality of the games, the entertainment value throughout all four matches. Even, I mean, 39 players used, 3 wins, cementing a top 4 world ranking. And just great games, memorable games.
One of the best things about being a sports fan, Keith, is that sometimes you allow yourself to get carried away and idly daydream about what the future might hold for us. And this is one of those times where, you know, nothing can derange us between now, at least, and the start of the Six Nations, where we feel pretty good about the state of Irish rugby.
Yeah, I try not to. You know that, Ger, but my God, it's hard not to just lose the run of yourself a little in this occasion. You know, and with... I think backing it up with the most ramshackle backline possible for the second half against Australia just proves that we have a bit of strength and depth beyond the 23, which makes life a little bit sweeter. I will say, and my only thing holding that back is I just think England are impressive at the moment. So we'll see what happens with them this weekend. And I love how bitter. It's great to see bitterness in other teams when you don't have to play, you know, that one. So the amount of sniping between...
former teammates.
Czech and Joe's great. Well, sure, look.
Do you think they're kind of like laughing out of one side of their face? Or they actually... they've begun to hate each other properly. I can't tell.
Yeah, I can't tell either. I do know that Jones is the most magnificent, snarly, grumpy guy of all time. And he has all the English players nervous about how he's going to be. So I don't know that it's all a show for him. I talked to a few of them over the last couple of weeks. They just, and some of the coaching staff, they're on edge. They have to do everything right every day. It's permanently making certain that everything is ticked properly.
Yeah.
And he is just not destabilizing everybody because they're able to take it, but nobody is guaranteed anything in there. And that's an interesting idea. And like, I think Joe Schmidt tends to have the same level of exactitude, not quite as much of the pressure as is the guys looking over their shoulder all the time. They do need to play and they do need to show discipline and performance, but there seems to be a fair amount of fear in England. So I think this weekend, when we see what happens with that, and then you end up with two teams that are viable contenders in the Six Nations and viable contenders to push themselves further up to the top of the ratings.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's... you have to be excited. I'm still absolutely blown away by Chicago. I mean, as a weekend, as a game, as an atmosphere, as an emotion, as the quality of the skill. You asked the question at the very start, is this the best November series we've had? By a country mile it is.
Just on that Michael Cech, Eddie Jones thing, it's real. It's very evidently real. You could tell from knowing Michael Cech as well as I've done and known him a long time now, about 10 years, whatever it is, the way he responded to one question about Eddie Jones in the Aviva Stadium after the match last night. He was in a bad mood anyway. He's always in a really bad mood after defeat, more than most coaches. But you can tell that Eddie Jones is a wind-up merchant who's got under Cech's skin as well. And this goes back to last June. And maybe the comments, the barb comments from Steve Hansen about, you know, Cech letting Jones bully him off the pitch a little bit and has resonated a little bit and has rankling with him a little bit. But it's also getting personal because he's talking about Jones's legacy in Australia and how he's basically, you know, left his home country of birth and where he owes everything he's achieved in the game. He's kind of he's tarnishing his legacy there, so I think it's getting quite personal.
Did he say that?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, right.
I know, this is real.
Oh, I thought maybe the two lads were like, oh, we know
this seems real to me.
Wow. Because I was wondering about how we had Campisi on the show at the weekend, and I was talking about Eddie Jones and how he must be perceived. Like, Eddie Jones is, you know, if the Johnny Wilkinson drop goal happens for an Australian player instead of Johnny Wilkinson, he's one of the all-time great coaches in world rugby history.
Mm-hmm. I heard you saying that.
Like, as it is now, he's just like, but that's nonsensical because, you know, the difference is there's no difference between him and Clive Woodward in that World Cup. It's just that it's that's how sport works.
That's exactly how sport works. Winning is everything, ultimately, and particularly when it comes to something like a World Cup.
And I suppose if you're Australia in particular.
Yeah, and it was an Australian soil. The only thing is, well, not only will I agree with Keith about England and, like, you know, they're now, what is it, 13 wins in a row.
Just in case anybody missed it, Argentina had a man sent off, or sorry, England had basically had a man sent off in the first 5 minutes of that game.
6 minutes in, Elliot Daly, and they won with 14 men, and they won comfy.
They still killed them, really.
They really killed them. Now, Argentina, I think what the November window has shown, it's explained a lot about the Rugby Championship and why New Zealand could win that competition with 6 bonus point wins, because certainly South Africa went backwards and are still going backwards, beaten by Italy. More and more of that series in the summer looks like one that got away.
Yeah.
Australia have regrouped and are coming again, but that's why they finished second in the Rugby Championship, which was the only place up for grabs. And Argentina have gone backwards as well. Somebody told me they've had 50 long distance flights this year, the Argentinians, since the World Cup. I believe it, looking at their travel schedule, and it's taken a toll on them. But also, it's not just Ireland, and it's not just England for that matter. There's been a bit of a revival in the Northern Hemisphere in 14 head-to-heads between the Six Nations teams and the Rugby Championship. It's been 8 wins to the Northern Hemisphere, including Italy's win over South Africa. Yeah. You'd have to say Scotland are very dangerous banana skin first up, given their results. They beat Argentina. They should have beaten Australia, and they thrashed Georgia. And the one for me that is intriguing, it might not come to fruition come next February, but France were amazingly entertaining and good value in their, not only did they thrash Samoa, but they should have beaten Australia. They left a lot of kicks behind, and they really rattled New Zealand's cage. They only lost that game by 5 points, which largely swung on one intercept by Beauden Barrett, which is a 14-point turnover. Do you know, those 2 games against Australia and New Zealand, they went back to playing French rugby, a lot of French rugby. They made 65 offloads in the 2 games, and they made 35 line breaks. And Wesley Fofana finally has found the love from a French coach and is playing like Wesley Fofana does in a blue shirt.
Yeah.
Camille Lopez is the answer 10. They've got lots of powerful carriers like Louis Picamo. They've got pace on the flanks.
It's annoying.
Now, the only thing with
great,
the French is
but
that hopefully their top 14 championship will flog them to death as it normally does, and come to Six Nations they'll be, you know, playing every week and whatever else. But it does look as if Novis might be building something too as well. So they won't be easy when they come here. And Wales, you know, the ultimate banana skin, the penultimate round. I know they don't look to be up to much when you look, judge them by the Australian performance when they were well beaten, and they barely got past Japan, but they do that every November window. They struggle against the Tonga or Fiji, whoever it is. They still beat, they still won 3 in a row, beating Argentina, Japan and South Africa, so they've got a bit of momentum in the Six Nations as well. It's a very, very competitive tournament this year.
Alright, let's talk about some strength and depth and focus on Ireland for a minute. I want to play a clip from Andy Dunn, former Leinster, Connacht and Harlequins out half. He was on the show on Saturday and Sunday. Here he is speaking on Sunday, talking about the gap between Johnny Sexton and Paddy Jackson, and making the point that it isn't as great as most people suggest.
Yeah, I thought Paddy did well. I thought his place kicking was excellent. And again, it's always a pressure environment as a place kicker there, particularly when you are not the first choice and you're coming in there like he is and there's question marks. So his first kick actually was a tricky one, was 40 metres out, you know, and he turned down easier options. Obviously, we went for the line out. So those elements of his game, the place kicking, his passing was pretty good too, and he generally is a good passer. So overall, I would say he's woken up this morning quite quietly confident and satisfied with his performance.
And what's the gap with Sexton? Where are we short? What's the je ne sais quoi that Sexton brings to the party?
I don't think Sexton brings any je ne sais quoi. I think he just does regimentally exactly what's asked of him, and he tends to do it all the time. And I think as a coach, Joe loves that. He has his lieutenant on the field. It's like mini Joe on the field. It's Joe's brain telling people what to do. The players who play with Sexton would say he has a similar kind of attention to detail, whereby he knows where everyone else should be as well as where he should be. And if you're not in those positions, he lets them know. Mm. Very few people in life seem to operate like that. I mean, I know Joe would have picked Madigan as a 10 a lot. Madigan is an entirely different operator to Sexton, and so is Joey Carberry, for example. So, and I think Paddy Jackson's probably somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
I think there's an aura about Johnny Sexton being there, which he's quite domineering and he gives leadership, and I think he gives other players confidence because he gives that direction. But what he also does is he takes decision making away from other people at times, probably in a good way. But when he's not there, others maybe have to step up a bit in terms of responsibility and decision making. Mm. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, because there's a lot of talent there, and there's a lot of guys who are leaders in their own provinces and teams who have capacity to make decisions under pressure. So I don't think it's that big an issue if he's not there.
Yeah.
While I think, agreed, he is the first choice, I don't think it should be, he should be cast in stone, for example, for the next 2 years.
Keith?
Well, he hasn't played a huge amount for Ireland in the last 6 or 8 months, so we have gone on fine. And like I'd said, I think that's a fairly insightful look at our 3-10s, actually. And I it's very hard when you're going back to the spring, and Ireland were stuttering a little bit, and we were getting smashed a lot, and Sexton looked miserable. And yes, he's demanding and cranky, and you know, I can appreciate cranky players. I think there's something great about that, you know, they don't want to make any mistakes. But he just looked beaten up for emotionally, mentally, physically, but at the end of the Six Nations. And I thought we'd gone a little bit not stale, but you know, we just weren't free flowing. We'd been playing a style that was working for us, and then it didn't work in the Six Nations, and we weren't changing a huge amount, and the players weren't maybe as confident to have a go for it a bit more. I thought that changed in the summer with Paddy Jackson. I thought he has a far more fluid game style. He doesn't have that lieutenant was what Donner called him, which is, he manages the game, and Sexton manages the game incredibly, and like it's chess, slightly fast chess, but chess nonetheless. Paddy Jackson seems slightly more liberated, not maybe doesn't have that mindset, and would be a tad more natural, and maybe that's been unfair to Johnny. And I thought, I thought Paddy Jackson played very well in the autumn. I'm a fan of Carberry. I like the flow of his hands, and I think he is more natural still. He doesn't kick his goals like the other two, and that's something he'll have to rectify, because you can't afford to have that. But there is a level of additional skill,
yeah,
I think, when you see Carberry, and that I do like. And I do understand why you may not pick that player. But I think in the not too distant future, he will be factored in far more. And look, we're looking at Johnny Sexton lasting 20 minutes or 50 minutes or 60 minutes. He obviously has a bit of a problem with his hamstrings, and whether that's his back or whatever, which an awful lot of hamstrings stem from. He does need to get that sorted and get it back in again. He is still our first number of 10. Of course he is. And I know there was lots of chat earlier on in the week as to whether he was going to take a break now,
yeah,
or not taking a break now. You know, there's not many things I regret in my career, and these things didn't happen when I played. They kind of did a little bit. Joe Roth took sort of 6 months off at one stage. But players don't do it. It's very hard to figure out when you can do it or you can't. And it's only when you retire that you look back and say, God, you know, if I took a year out there, maybe I could have played for an extra 2 or 3 years.
It's all about money, right? Ultimately, the union and the provinces won't want to pay a player to be on holidays for 6 months or whatever. And like, I get that margins are tight and that it's a difficult thing to organise, but surely some kind of compromise can be arranged. We'll give you an extra 6 months at the end of that contract, or we'll build it into the next deal.
I think so. I think there's a way around everything. And I also think there's a way around limiting games and limiting different things that you're doing. I will say Sexton looked, I just thought he's looked happy in the autumn. I mean, he didn't look happy going off the field the other day, but he's looked happy in the couple of games he's played for Leinster. He's been back. There's a bit of a spring to his step. I'm very disappointed to see him limp off the field, because, you know, when you see players of that quality and calibre, and they've got their joy back, you want to see him get a good run of games. So I'm very disappointed for him.
Do you buy the argument that there isn't that much difference, Jerry, between Sexton and now the chasing pack, that gap is closing?
Certainly it's closed, and Paddy Jackson is accumulating more and more big game experience, and last Saturday would be a huge benefit to his career development. He kicked 11 out of 11 in his two matches at the Aviva, which was certainly his 5-from-5 haul was vital in beating Australia, given it was only a 3-point game in the end. And he was very good in South Africa. And he's showing an increased maturity. He's gained more and more responsibility from Les Kipp up in Ulster in just terms of running the game. And he's still only 24. Like, remember where Johnny Sexton was at 24. He's barely starting out in his international career. And as I've said in the show before, Ron O'Gara, Eric Elwood, David Humphreys, they all played their best rugby in the 30s. So with that in mind, all being fit and well, I still think Johnny Sexton is clearly Ireland's number one out half, because he's only 31. He should have some, all being fit and well, some really good years. As Gordon Darcy said in his column in the Irish Times today, he's actually now at the peak of his game for an out half.
The fitness issues need to be sorted out somewhere along the way. They need to get
and only he and the medical staff and the fitness staff in Leinster know how much rest now he needs for these hamstring problems to actually be completely cured. The problem with hamstring injuries, I was talking about this with Ollie Campbell last night. He was at our awards dinner in the Rugby Writers, and you know, he was played by hamstring in his later stage, and you just don't know a lot of the time until you go out on the pitch and you run around, and it could be 5 minutes, it could be 75 minutes, and then snap, it goes again.
You'd hope the science is a bit more advanced from
you would, of course, but I mean, it's still to a degree. If he needs a rest for a few weeks, then he got to take that rest so he comes back proper. But if he's fit to play against Northampton in December, he plays against Northampton in December. If he's fit to play in January, he plays in the Six Nations. These are his golden years, and this is a big, big season for Johnny. And I think I agree with Keith. I think his form for Leinster this season has been really good. His form in that first hour on the pitch in Chicago was outstanding. The pity for him is that he only played for 78 minutes in this November window, and certainly Ireland have had to become more used to being without Johnny in the last 6 or 8 months, and it's great that Paddy Jackson has stepped up the way he has, and that there's a new out half in the scene in Joey Carby, who just looks a natural born player. You know, he just has time in the ball, space in the ball, whatever, but he needs to be goal kicking for Leinster as well, I think, which he isn't doing.
Yeah, I just think if you go back to, you mentioned three guys, you mentioned Elwood, O'Gara and Humphreys. Those guys never got injured, you know. They played, Eric not as long as the other two, but they played for a long time without getting a whole lot of injuries at all. And that's the difference with Johnny Sexton. And yes, it could be 3 weeks, it could be a rest, but it could be something structurally wrong with his back, or you know, anything that it could be like that. And that may not be that period of time. He may be fine and fit and able to play, but likely to pull something or not to pull something. Or it may be that he needs a bit of time out to try and make certain that he may have an imbalance or whatever it is with how he plays, or with a muscle problem or a lower back problem. So you never know in terms of those. And that's why it's frustrating at 31, because he doesn't want to go at 31 and limp from game to game to game, to come back and think actually it could go at any stage, because this is the symptom, not the problem.
I wanted,
and you don't know.
I just want to move on and talk about some of the positions that maybe we don't have as much depth. Conor Murray.
You were going to start with scrum half once you said that.
Yeah, and maybe Rory Best. An unbelievable achievement for Rory Best to hit the 100 caps.
Unbelievable.
And I'm thrilled for him that the November and his captaincy has been absolutely amazing so far. It's been historic. But Cronin is obviously an amazing impact player to have, and he's got that nailed down, and he won't want to hear that's what his future probably is going to be for the Ireland team, which means he's probably not actually second choice, you know? He's like, if you can,
I know he is clearly now.
But if you get somebody else who can actually replace Rory Best, it's amazing to be able to have Sean Cronin be an impact player, because we want to win these games. We don't want to manage them to a point where we're in them. We were trying to burst those last 15-20 minutes.
Well, Rory Best's captaincy has been phenomenal, given you remember who he took over the role from. Brian O'Driscoll, then Paul O'Connell, like, follow those two. And he admitted to me in an interview I did with him last week that it was very daunting for him at first. But you can see that his decision making, particularly in Chicago, and again last weekend, to go for the corner when he did, he invariably called them right. Just the execution let them down a little bit at times, but it really reaped a rich dividend in Chicago. It was very positive, proactive captaincy. He also another thing as well, you think of Ireland's penalty count in the three big games against New Zealand and Australia. Ireland conceded 11 penalties. I think a lot of that is down to Rory Best's improved manner and demeanour with referees. He doesn't glower and tower over them. He doesn't get too chippy with them, but he communicates very, very effectively with them. And I think part of the way Ireland are presenting such a good image to referees at the moment is through Rory Best's captaincy.
What about the strength and depth issue, Keith?
Yeah, I think I mean, Sean Cronin is, it's one of those sort of it has to be very irritating for him, actually, at times. I know he's behind the captain, and that makes it hard for him as well. But the truth of it is, he doesn't look like unseating Rory Best. Rory Best has played better this year than the last time he played as well as he has this year was in the run-up to the last Lions tour, actually, when he hit unbelievable form. And unfortunately for him, he lost a little bit of his accuracy and confidence on the tour, and it became very hard for him. But he dug all the way through and dug all the way out at the back of it. And it was amazing when you have a setback. And he with his confidence definitely had a setback, but he came back from that stronger. But it's got stronger and stronger and stronger. And one point you said there, Jerry, is that he was daunted with the captaincy.
Mm.
He's a quiet guy. You know, captaincy may have not sat that very well with him, and he'd had a huge amount of experience. He still is a pretty young in terms of captaincy. But he's got better and better. And I thought maybe he lost a little bit of confidence in the second All Black game, if I'm to be honest. I thought he didn't kick into the corner at times and didn't take scrums at times when you thought he might have. I thought he started doubting some of the lineouts because they were being put under pressure. And what I loved about that is, and you don't know, because you don't know whether he made the right call or the wrong call. We're only looking at it after the fact, and you can kind of make those decisions of whether you do it. But I thought on the game at the weekend, he was far more assertive. It was as if, yeah, okay, I may have got a couple wrong. I'm not going to get them wrong this week. And he's learning at an accelerated rate on a day that had to be hugely emotional.
Yeah.
100 tests. Like, it's very hard to really explain to people to what it's like to play in a front row of an international, to how hard it is on the body, how fatiguing it is, and all the other things that you have to go and do. He has done that for 100 tests. I mean, that is just phenomenal. And I know there was nice things said about him during the week, but I almost thought they didn't quite get anywhere near high enough to be able to play at that level. To have won what he has won in that period of time has just marked him out as being the best Irish hooker that we've had. And the fact that he's been captaining for the last period of time is just phenomenal. And you have to, you know, you have to kind of glory in that idea that we have players that are robust enough to be able to up their standard and say that for the last 3 or 4 weeks he's played the best rugby of his career.
And in the last 10 seasons, Ger, he's not missed a single Six Nations match. He's played 15 in a row.
That's insane.
It is insane, and that position is so attritional. Your one about Conor Murray is very valid, though. I think if there's one thing that other opposing Six Nation coaches will have looked on in Ireland over the November window, it was how outstanding Murray was in Chicago. I mean, the way he influenced the game. Now, he's probably Ireland's greatest scrum half already. He doesn't take steps before the pass. He passes and he moves at the next breakdown. His passing, the ball goes through the air very quickly.
His Chicago game was his best ever game. It was
He's had a lot of good games. Yeah. I mean, he's a superb footballer. He's a brilliant corner flagging defender. He's a superb footballer in the open play. He's got a really good kicking game on his day. He can take goal kicks, as we discovered in Chicago. I just think he's an outstanding player. But Kieran Marmion, you know, hero of the hour in many respects last Saturday, to pull off 6 tackles and save 2 or 3 tries, but the way he used his speed off the line to save those tries was phenomenal. But he's got little or no experience at the international level.
So what do you do? How do you cheat that?
It's a very hard thing to do.
You're not throwing away Six Nations at any point.
All I'll say is that if you look at the All Blacks rematch, they clearly went after Conor Murray. They used Dane Coles to go after him in particular. I remember Keith Wood going after Diego Dominguez one day in Thomond Park. It reminded me of that. But this was much more illegal because they were attacking Conor Murray after he passed the ball, so they put him on the ground. They harried and hassled him. Now, he clearly wasn't right. Looked like a bit of an injury because he was restricted in his training that week. But you would have to think that Eddie Jones in England and Rob Howley in Wales, particularly being a scrum half himself, who's coached Murray in the Lions Tour, they're going to look at Ireland and think, yeah, let's take a leaf out of the All Blacks manual here. You go after, you try and target Conor Murray. And they didn't always do it illegally, and he could have done with some more protection. But hey, we've sung that tune before about Sexton. Now it might be more Murray they go after.
The Lions is going to be... Is it next summer or is it the summer after?
Next summer.
Next summer. Right. So there's the Tour of Japan. Marmion will play those games.
Mm-hmm. And there's a match against the USA as well. So, you know, he'll play 2 or 3 of that summer tour.
Yeah. And then there's next November internationals. Do you start Marmion in one of the big games? Like, because the situation that we found ourselves in, I was looking back at the team that we played against Argentina in the quarterfinals of the World Cup, and it's not that bad a team when you consider what the current team have just done. There's a few players who aren't first choice. Chris Henry's in that back row. But the front five are Cian Healy, Rory Best, Mike Ross, Ian Henderson and Devon Toner. Absolutely 100% acceptable. Ian Madigan's at half. But the problem is that they hadn't played together as combinations in big games. At some point, you need to take the risk on the replacements in a big game that really matters, so that they can't cheat. That you know, it's not a pretend, oh, here's the game against Canada, you've played, it's going to be an international and we're running in all these tries. So you're really good under those circumstances. What about when it's a World Cup quarterfinal and somebody's suspended or injured?
Yeah, it's one of the difficulties, really. Mm. Of, you know, you have to win. You're playing to win always. Everything factors into going about winning. But I couldn't argue with what you've just said there. And it's who are the guys that are down that list? And I mean, I thought Marmion was, you know what, he stood up so well, and that's frightening. And people will, again, a lot of people will say, well, sure, look, they're used to playing rugby, and it's you know, it's not that big a change. Well, it's a huge change for him to step out and play against Australia. It's a bigger change still when he steps out and plays in a wing and he has the rashers where he's going. And you literally don't, because you ask a 12 how hard it is to play a 13, they'll say it's entirely different. And a left winger to a right winger is it's similar but different. And different things happen all the time. You put a 9 out there, and he got lost on a couple of occasions. Of course he did. But he did so much unbelievable work. But yeah, we need nines. But we had this, if you go back to John Hayes and before John Hayes retired, when we were just saying, I mean, come on, we need tight heads. We need number threes. We'd none. There was no real viable option. There was a huge gulf, and John played longer than expected for the very simple reason, you know, you can't just have one tight end in 10 years. So we don't at the moment, which is brilliant. But, and I would say this always, tight end, hooker, scrum half, out half.
Yeah.
You know, sevens optional afterwards, 13s optionals. But the real pure technical positions require the conveyor belt of talent.
And
so
games.
That there's at least there's some there, you know.
All right, we're completely out of time in this. Did you want to have a quick last word on that?
Yeah, just for like, I think it was 15 Six Nations champions in a row. Ireland had two number threes. Like, we got out of jail in that one. The bull was just indestructible and Mike Ross wasn't far behind him. So, hey, at least we have got Tyke Furlong on the scene, and what a November he had.
If he can last for a decade, we'd be delighted.
Well, there's John Ryan there now and Marty Moore as well. So
that's the thing.
Yeah,
there
the
is
cupboard
some
looks a bit fuller.
Yeah. All right, great stuff. Jerry Thorney of the Irish Times, Keith Wood, thanks, lads. If you
Cheers.
Missed any of that, you can get it on Wednesday Night Rugby podcast. Has been an equaliser for West Ham. Arsenal are 2-0 down. We'll get the story of those goals from Kev after these.
Off the Ball,
home of live Premier League every Sunday from midday with BetDAC.com. Now with exchange starting price, live streaming and pro form race guides on all Irish and UK horse races.